Hey, everybody, a bonus episode of The Charlie Kirk Show today. My remarks at University of Arkansas, and boy, do I mix it up with trans activists, pro-trans feminists, and a guy that sounds like Marlon Brando. I think you're going to really enjoy this episode. My speech followed by unedited, unscripted questions from the audience. A lot of disagreement. So maybe you'll fast forward to that point, but I think you'll really enjoy it. Support our program at charliekirk.com/support or get involved with Turning Point USA at tpusa.com that puts on this tour where we go to college and high school campuses and bring American values to where it matters most, tpusa.com. Support our program at charliekirk.com/support, and you can always email me your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campuses.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage. For personalized loan services you can count on, go to andrewandtodd.com, the wonderful andrewandtodd.com. Great to be here. We're kicking off our tour again. We're going to have a lot of fun. I love Arkansas. I've come here a couple times in my life, and my cousins are here. It's great to see them. See, we all fled Chicago together. There's a lot of that going around. Anyone else flee Chicago? Yeah, we're all in this together. So it's a great place to be. We now live in Arizona and traveling the country, bringing the good message of freedom and liberty. I just want to thank our amazing Turning Point USA students. They've done such an amazing job promoting this event. They've done such a great job. And it's really important what they're doing, being outspoken conservatives on high school and college campuses. It's the most important thing that's happening in our country. So I'm banned from Twitter, everybody, if you haven't heard. So we're going to walk through that. I actually haven't spoken very much about it publicly. I did a podcast or two on it. And it's on a very interesting thing. So the way Twitter works, if you don't know, if you violate one of their kind of guidelines, they give you an opportunity to delete the tweet. Basically, okay, I engaged in hate speech. You can get your Twitter account back. And so we logged onto our Twitter account. We're like, wait, why don't we have access to our Twitter account anymore? So I tweeted this out, and I want to just anyone to tell me if there's anything inaccurate about this tweet. Richard Levine spent 54 years of his life as a man. He had a wife and a family. He transitioned to being a woman in 2011. Joe Biden then appointed Levine to be a four-star admiral, and is now USA Today has named Rachel Levine as Woman of the Year. True. Where are the feminists? Right? Perfectly factual. But now I engaged in something called dead naming. Are you familiar with this phenomenon? No, I had to learn it alongside everyone else, including our millions of followers. So dead naming is when you use the name that used to exist of someone who's trans. And super, like, politically incorrect, I guess. You're, like, not even allowed to mention the birth name anymore. It's now called dead naming. So I guess you can't call, like, Muhammad Ali Cassius Clay anymore, or anyone who's ever changed their name ever. And so because of this, Twitter basically says, okay, you're no longer allowed to have access to your account. You have to acknowledge and bend the knee and tell the rest of the world that you engaged in hate speech. And there's this, like, big red button that says you can press delete. And look, it's very tempting. You know, we used to do a lot on Twitter. And I thought to myself, you know what? Every single, you know, semester I'm traveling, I'm talking to college kids, telling them to hold the line, that it's worth the cost, you know, that you might lose friends. I'm like, what a hypocrite I would be if I just, like, pressed that red button and told Twitter, like, you know, I did something wrong. Meanwhile, keep fighting on campus, everybody, and see you later. You know what? No, actually, no. Like, Twitter, have a nice life. If you want to give me my account back without me pressing that stupid red button, then fine. And it kind of goes to this deeper question. And by the way, if you read my tweet, I think I was actually, like, overly generous, quite honestly. I admitted that one can transition from a man to a woman, which I don't believe, actually. I think you could think you can, but I think your chromosomal structure is unchangeable. Scientifically, that's totally true, regardless of how much scientific intervention that you put forward. And so, but you could think whatever you want to think. And Still, Twitter's like, nope, you dead-named that person. Again, not anything I was even like trying to do or was aware of, just kind of giving a factual biography of the entire set of circumstances, which kind of leads to a question I want us all to ponder over tonight and think deeply about, and I'd love all of your opinions, which is the most important question that has really been confusing people, including the top levels of our government, which is, what is a woman, right? And so I know this is so hard for some of us to grasp. I know I'm not a biologist, so I'm not really well-versed to be able to answer these questions. Of course, for those of you that, I don't know, watch the Oscars and not, which is funny enough, we'll get into that. But don't watch anything that happens around you. Ketanji Brown Jackson, woman that wants to, I think she's a woman. Who am I to say? I don't know. She won't tell us because she doesn't know what a woman is. Trying to be on the U.S. Supreme Court, was asked a question by Marsha Blackburn, very simple question, what can you define what a woman is? And she responded like with this kind of smug arrogance, no, I can't. I'm not a biologist. So look, I'm not a veterinarian. I know a dog when I see one. I'm not a meteorologist. I know that there was a tornado yesterday at 4:30 in the morning, right? Not exactly something that you need to have like a degree in biology to be able to understand what a woman is. And it kind of got thinking as she was like so smug and she responded, which is, this has now become a wildly controversial thing in America. It's that if you're not even able to say, you know, this is a woman and this is a man. And what's so amazing about this is that 95 to 97% of the country agrees in biological reality. And yet 95 to 97% of the country is afraid to talk about this issue. And so it's like this totally out of whack balance, right? Where regardless of your politics, regardless of your view, I think we could all agree that there are differences between men and women. Like men can't become pregnant. Women can, like very basic things. Apple, by the way, has a pregnant man emoji. You guys can check it out on your phone. I don't know why you would. It's kind of weird. But anyway, you can if you want. And so we're at this moment where a Supreme Court justice is like, what you're asking me to kind of define what a woman is. And it's so interesting. Like when I grew up and all the liberals were screaming at me in like high school and they were mostly feminists, like all they cared about was like women's rights. Like it was the number one thing. And I look back, I kind of agree with like 90% of what they used to say, which is, we women are so different than men, we don't want to be oppressed by you. Like, okay, I think that's probably overblown, but at least you agree that there's differences, right? At least like this, you know what the type of feminists I'm talking about. And so now I open up USA Today on the plane yesterday on the way here, and they have the woman of the year kind of on display. And there's Levine, like right in the middle of it as the woman of the year. And yeah, it is disgusting. That's right. We should be unafraid to say that, by the way. Like, this is not normal. This is not like the new progressive thing. It's awful and it should be rejected and repudiated. And anyone who believes it shouldn't be taken seriously, honestly. Like, they should be put in the category of flat earthers. I mean that. I mean, it's not something you should take it seriously. Like, well, we need to really think deeply about a woman. No, we don't. Actually, no. I could see women in this audience and see men in this audience, and it's that simple. But no, you're not a biologist. You don't have a PhD to be able to interpret it. Maybe that's the problem, isn't it? Maybe the problem is we've been giving all this power to people with PhDs and medical degrees, and we've become less free, less healthy, sicker, more depressed, more addicted to alcohol and drugs in the last 2 years. The more power we give to these experts that are biologists and scientists like Fauci and all these people that run this country. Maybe they know very little, and the everyday plumber, electrician, police officer, and welder have far more wisdom than some biologist in Harvard that's supposed to tell us how to run our life. So what's so, again, I don't like desire to talk about this issue, like what is a man, what is a woman, but this issue's been forced and we're going to win. It's that simple, okay? And it's kind of one of the most important things. You can't get this right, you're probably not going to be able to, you know, decide whether or not you should have border security or how you should educate your kids or whether you should have kids. You probably got to get the fundamental, you know, building blocks of society right. And so this all happened simultaneously, the Twitter ban, Levine, being called woman of the year, and then just kind of the death of female NCAA sports that most people didn't even know what it happened in real time. So I have to always kind of reiterate it for the audience of what happened, because it's amazing how the media censored this entire story. So enter William Thomas. I'm not allowed to say that because it's dead naming, whatever, William Thomas, whatever, it's all these rules. That's how you know you're living in tyranny, by the way, when you can't remember the rules you have to live under. I can't even remember them all. Oh, I'm not allowed to say that. Are we streaming on YouTube? I can't even remember all of it. It's like, well, if I might get stripped. I don't know. We'll have fun. Maybe I'll lose my Twitter and YouTube in a week. I think we are streaming right now, so whatever. Actually, it's not against YouTube's rules to dead name. Anyway, whatever. So can't remember all of them. I can't get it straight. So William Thomas, okay, seems like a nice enough person, was the 462nd best swimmer at University of Pennsylvania in the country, was a man, born a man, XY chromosomes, was trying to compete in swimming, wasn't really getting anywhere. One day, Thomas wakes up and changes the name to Leah Thomas and decides that want to keep swimming. So goes from the 462nd best swimmer to the best swimmer almost overnight. And this happened really slowly, by the way. This wasn't like an overnight thing. If you were watching this carefully like we were covering this for like a year and a half. They were like, hey, this is going to be a problem. Like, hey, this is going to be a problem. And they're like, oh, no, it's not like they're going to let it. They're not going to let Thomas, you know, compete at the top level of the championship. And there you go. At the NCAA championship in Atlanta 2 weeks ago, Thomas was competing and won the NCAA championship as a biological man. And again, that kind of goes back to that whole feminist critique, right? Which is we're so upset that because we're being oppressed by men. And I say, so the feminists are silent because they're now okay because they're oppressed by men, even though they think they're women. It's like, isn't that against the entire argument that I was told my entire life? So now we have conservatives trying to stand up for women because the feminists no longer think that women are necessary to be defended. It's like, if you're confused, good, because I think it's part of the point, quite honestly. I can't keep the rules straight. Like, who's on what team? Like, I'm sure there's some feminists that are pretty upset about this, but they're being drowned out, and they're not being taken seriously. And by the way, I'm not necessarily against like first wave feminism or parts of second wave feminism, which is like we have biological differences, we might have different needs and wants and concerns. Like, I think that's all really healthy stuff. I don't think we should reject that. Or I think it goes way too far. And we saw this in the Kavanaugh hearing, is where it gets into the hatred of men, which is a whole separate conversation. But it's amazing to see the American left in the last couple of years. You saw it in the Kavanaugh hearings, right? So Kavanaugh, you had this incredibly enthusiastic, like quasi-militant base of a major political party that was like, okay, this guy drank beer when he was 16 years old, and he might be a gang rapist. And like it was like crazy, right? No substantial evidence at all behind it. They almost derailed the entire confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh. And then a couple of years later, they put up their own nominee who's like, yeah, I don't know what a woman is. And it's like that's a huge change, by the way, in just a short period of time. And I just want to kind of take pause. I think we have to kind of take a cultural timeout as a country, by the way, and say, how did that happen so quickly? Like, how did we go from like unquestionably protecting women's sports to now having men winning NCAA championships? And I have a couple theories behind this, and I think it's a little bit contrarian, which, you know, you can agree or disagree with, which is I blame men for a lot of it, to be perfectly honest. Where were the fathers that allowed this Thomas character to go abuse their daughters when they were, and yes, it is abuse, by the way, 100%. It's not abuse in the physical setting, but you're using your higher levels of testosterone, your increased bone density, to be able to win. That's cheating. We don't like cheating. And it's all about, so I want a medal. It's about my truth. Actually, it's not about your truth. It's not. Like, and by the way, here's the easy choice. People say, Charlie, what's your solution? It's very simple. Like, you could go transition. Just compete with the chromosomal structure you were born with. Go continue to be the 462nd best swimmer against men. You can go wear a bonnet. You could do whatever you want. But we're not going to allow you to go compete against other women. We'll go respect your transition. You could take the drugs. You could do the whole thing. Compete against the chromosomes you were born with. No, but instead you could leapfrog from 462nd to the first, and it is cheating. And it's cutting in line. We don't like cheaters as society. In fact, you know, any three or four-year-old, you know, kind of into their own intuition will say that's not fair, and it isn't fair. And so it really is something worth pondering, which is how do we allow this to happen? And I'll just kind of complete the point, is that, I mean, men in a lot of different ways are supposed to be the ones that pick the tough fights to defend people that can't defend themselves. I know that's super politically incorrect to say, but it's true, okay? Is that men go to war to go do things that you don't want to always see happen so you could remain free. That's the way things have worked for thousands of years. And so when there is an issue that arises, and I was watching these videos of the NCAA championship, and they showed the fathers, and they're wearing like four masks, and like they're like hunched over and like they don't know. I'm like, that's why this is happening. It's like the rise of the beta male. That's exactly why this has happened. And it's not a, it's like, I mean, you should laugh at it because it's, you know, intended to be somewhat of a joke, but it's actually not a joke because it's these like upper middle class Northeastern corridor fathers that always thought that, like, I'm going to raise my daughter to feel like she's going to be boss babe. She can rule the world. She can do whatever she wants to do. She can have it all, right? Like, that's kind of like the Northeast. You're, like, born in Boston. You grow up in the Philadelphia corridor. Like, that's what you tell your daughter. Like, you could seize dragons. You could do it all. Like, don't get married immediately. Men are just going to bring you down. And then, like, next thing you know, at the NCAA championship, a man is beating them. And the man is like, well, I don't know what to do. I mean, I'm not going to, like, stand up for my daughter. And it really does beg the question, which is, where is society going to draw the line? We don't know the question. We don't know the answer to that question yet. We certainly don't draw the line on bathrooms, right? Most states across the country, you can just waltz into whatever bathroom you want. I don't think Arkansas has passed that. I hope not. You have? You've passed it in law? Well, I don't know. Well,
Target only.
Oh, in Target only? Yeah, okay. Has Walmart passed that yet? Oh, no? Okay, good. Yeah, that's good. So, look, this is something I want to just kind of encourage you. If you feel like you're afraid to talk about these topics and that you're really intimidated because it comes too academic, that is a propaganda technique. Okay? So there's this effort that's been launched in the country to use an argument from authority. We all know argument from authority, right? It's a logical fallacy. Like, I have a doctorate in a certain field, therefore I'm able to comment on things that you aren't able to comment on. And of course we know that's not true. That's not a way to argue. You just can't say, I have a bunch of degrees, therefore the laws of physics don't actually apply. Like, you have to prove it. You have to make an argument behind it. And so, but they want you to be intimidated, and they're really good at it, by the way. They're phenomenal at actually making you feel intimidated and afraid. And, you know, the alphabet mafia, as I call them, the people that kind of run this entire cartel, they're nasty. I get it. Like, they will fire you from your job if you dare speak out against this, right? And what's so – anyone in sororities, by the way? It's kind of a big thing in the South, sororities, anyone? Sororities or fraternities, yes, good amount of people. I don't know around here, but in other states, it's like the sororities are afraid to talk and speak out on the very issues that are pretty fundamental to, like, the chartering documents of what a sorority and fraternity is. It's like men, women, they're like, well, I don't know. We might want to not, you know, upset the apple cart on this. And it's so interesting. It's like when you want to all of a sudden, like, put your fist up to say that America's a super racist country, it's like everyone's willing to break glass, right? Like, I'll go get arrested. I'll go protest till 2 a.m. Like, whatever it takes to go prove America's not racist, like, I'm going to go march in the streets, black square on Instagram, everybody, and then get me the one with the mask and the vaccine and then the Ukraine one, and whatever's next, I'm in line for it. Whatever it is, I'm already in support of the next hysteria. Okay, like, whatever, sure. But it's like the one thing that we're asking you to break glass for, like, societal, civilizational, like, structure, people, like, back away. And it really goes to show the power of the cultural machine. And that's part of why we're here tonight, by the way. So that you know that you're actually not alone, that there's hundreds, if not thousands, of other young people that actually share your views and your values, that whatever the kind of current tyranny of the moment isn't unquestionable. And so that's the other thing I want to mention is that, you know, I hate tyranny, you should hate tyranny. I hate when a few people rule a lot of people without their permission. That's basically what tyranny is, right? Small group of people ruling a lot of people without their permission. We love the Constitution. One of the reasons we love the Constitution is because it has permission built into the Constitution, consent of the governed, very basic component of the Constitution. You can't do something dramatic or bold without our permission, and we will check and balance to make sure that it doesn't happen. And so, but there's other forms of tyranny, though. It's not just government. And that's the one thing that I always try to tell conservatives is that there's cultural tyranny and there's corporate tyranny that is sometimes actually more powerful against you than just the government. You see, like, the government didn't ban me from Twitter, right? I mean, if the government banned me from Twitter, I'd actually be able to sue them and, you know, say that it's a First Amendment right. It's a private company. You can do whatever you want. And I know a lot of you that are looking now to go to apply for jobs, you know, and you're going to graduate college soon, and you're probably afraid, and I get it. I actually do. I'm not telling you not to be afraid. I'm telling you it's probably you're going to be a happier and freer person if you dismiss that fear. We could talk about that. But it's a legitimate thing, right? You went into debt, you know, to go study whatever they told you to go study. Hopefully you benefited from it. probably not, but like whatever, that's college. Happy to get into that. Most young people believe that college is a waste of time. That's a separate conversation for a different time. More of an indictment of the college cartel than anything else. But then you're nervous, right? You want to get a job. You want to be able to work for a good company. And the next thing you know, you go look up, 10 places you want to go to apply. Or even worse, you look up places where you're going to go get internships, right? Which is kind of a prerequisite. And all of a sudden, those of you that have summer internships, you go work for any of these companies. Like, whoa! Like, just like the HR training Zoom call, it's like I have to put my pronouns to, like, go work at this investment bank. And then all of a sudden, you know what that is? That's a warning shot for you. Without them ever putting it in writing, they're trying to tell you, they're like, hey, conservative over there, you want to get a paycheck? You want to have a career in this company? You better sit down and shut up because we're in charge. And it's really, I get it. It's intimidating. Now, there's ways to work through that. I actually think that's a really unhappy way to live under the tyranny of other people just for a paycheck. But for some people, I get it. You went into debt. You want to move your family up the socioeconomic ladder. But that's a form of tyranny. It's immoral. And there's other ways to fight it. Start your own business, entrepreneurship, all this sort of stuff. But that's not actually coming from the government. And that's where we need, as conservatives, need to broaden our kind of indictment of what is really challenging young people in particular. What are the things that you're coming up against? And it's not just you're worried about the FBI or the Department of Justice, which is, obviously super corrupt and comes after people for political purposes. But you're like, actually, I'm worried that my employer is going to have something. They're going to dig up something I said on my social media 8 years ago, take it out of context, put it as a referral to the HR manager, and my career is going to get obliterated. And those 4 years at the University of Arkansas will be for nothing. That's what keeps me up at night. So now I want to improve my social credit score system by posting the Ukrainian flag, posting the black square flag, and posting, showing that I got the 4 boosters and I'm on the waiting list for the 5th or whatever it is that, boosts your social credit score. That's so Maoist. Like, it's insanely totalitarian. And I know that there's some exceptions to this, but generally when you go work for a major corporation, I don't want to speak for the major corporations here in Arkansas. You guys could fill in whether or not they're, enlightened or woke or whatever, I don't know. But generally, most across the country, the Fortune 100 companies, the Fortune 25 companies, when you graduates go work for there, it's like compliance and there's another 1,000 people that want your job. And so how did we get here? How did we get to a place where Capital Street Partners, one of the largest investment banks in the country, are saying that, we're not going to hire white people for the next couple of years without full unanimous permission of the board. We're only going to hire people of color. How do we get to that place, right? And it kind of goes to this false virtue of tolerance that I want to explore with you guys, which is for far too long, like, we always sought to be the people that were liked and were nice. And that's a good thing to want, obviously. No one wants to be hated. But when they start to take over every major corporation and they take over every place that you're going to actually get value from, then all of a sudden you're like, wow, I wish people would have been a little disagreeable before. I could go example after example after example. And so what do you do about it? We can get to that in Q&A if you guys want. So I want to speak now just a little bit about kind of the things facing students and young people, and then we can do some questions and we'll have some fun. So I get in a lot of trouble when I say this, but adults don't heckle me when I say this. But I think just let me finish the argument. The students are going to be enthusiastic about it when I say this, which is that this generation has gotten a really raw deal. And this generation, I think, has been lied to and manipulated more so than any other generation in recent history. And I'm going to tell you why exactly. I'm not saying that they shouldn't work harder and all this. People, I just get the craziest emails. Charlie, all millennials are lazy. You know what? No. Some millennials are lazier than other generations. But most millennials, they want to get their act together, and they're the generation of rule followers. Now, you guys are mostly Generation Z. Is that right? Gen Z-ish? So let me tell you kind of this, how this generation was raised and where all of a sudden things went wrong. They did everything they were told to do for a decade. Okay, go get good ACT scores. Go get good SAT scores. Go take the AP courses. Go borrow a bunch of money to go to a school. Go to that school. Keep showing up to it. So they borrow money they don't have to study things that don't matter, to go find jobs that don't exist. Then they go move into urban metropolitan areas filled with a debt burden to go rent property and not own property. We as conservatives should be advocates for owning things. It creates better citizens and better people. It is the lowest property ownership of any generation in American history. We should support increasing property ownership. especially with acreage all around. It creates conservatives like immediately, right? When you have to like go manage something that isn't just like pushing a button in an elevator, that's what we should support. And so, but then they followed the rules, they followed the rules. And then what next hit? At the place where millennials and Gen Z are the most likely to have the surge of their income going up or their wealth increasing, we decide to lock down our country for 2 years because of a virus that they were not at threat from. And so they follow the rules. Okay, I'm going to stay at home 15 days to slow the spread. You got it. Well, we're now on day like 790 of 15 days to slow the spread. Okay, I'm going to follow the rules. I'm going to wear the mask at all times. I'm going to work from home, work remote. I'm going to do what I'm told to do, where promotions and job advancements are a lot harder when you're working at home. It just is. It's like a lot of these companies went through a stagnation and went through a short spurt, but you saw this incredible moment where we as a society decided to forsake the well-being of the young to try to protect the old. No society has done that in recent memory at all. And the argument was like, well, young people could spread it to older people. Had the young people stop seeing them until there's a solution that could actually be put forward? So what ended up happening? Well, everything now costs twice as much. Everything. From gas to property. And so this generation, it's so funny. I get people that reach out. They say, oh, this generation needs to just go buy property and land. Really, with what money exactly? Like, with the money they're not earning because they studied North African lesbian poetry at some local college or something? Or with the debt burden that they went into debt to go do that? Like, what money are they supposed to do a down payment on a home now that everything is more expensive? Everything. It costs like $900 to get from Little Rock now to here in a car or whatever it is, right? I'm sure you guys are paying like $150 to pay up, you know, fill your tank of gas. And so what I'm getting at, I'm not saying that young people can't work harder and make better decisions. All those things are true. I get that. But the three things that create good citizens, and I would say conservative citizens, are happening at the lowest rates ever in the country's history. Three things, okay? Owning property, getting married, and having children. So this generation is doing those three things less than any other generation in history. Adults should say time out. Why is that the case? Is it all because they're a bunch of rebellious punks? No. There's plenty of them. They're smart alecks, whatever. Okay, fine. Cultural stuff, Disney's a problem, social media, all that. So I get all of it. I'll agree with all of it. That is not why this generation has more people that are unmarried in their 30s than are married. First time ever. We've never seen anything quite like it. And so I would argue that one of the main reasons is obviously the cartel of the colleges and the whole scam that is embedded in that and how we have just totally condescendingly destroyed muscular work in this country, right, where we act as if the people who work at their hands are stupid when in reality they're necessary and wise, and the people that are stupid are the people that say, I can't define what a woman is. But you all know this. When you're in high school, you get this like relentless train of questioning, like, where are you going to college? Where are you going to college? Where are you going to college? Not why are you going to college, but where are you going to college? Where are you going to college? And never should be like, you know what? I might not go to college. I'm going to go become a welder. Like, oh. And basically, when you're 18, it makes a really big impact. Like, oh, you're going to be lower on the caste system. Like, you're going to be one of those people. You're going to be like a sweaty person. And so basically, and you guys all know it's true. Like, you know, the high school guidance counselors have done more damage to destroying muscular work in this country than any other community of people that I could think of. And so it creates this caste system where the people who keep the economy alive are the muscular class, the ones that drive the trucks. They're the ones that make sure our stores continue to have food on them. They're the ones that plant and grow the food. They're the ones that protect our streets when there's civil unrest. They're the ones that go fight the wars that keep us safe. They're the ones that police our border. But what happened is during the lockdowns is the Zoom and the Skype class decided that everyone just can kind of work from a laptop. We're just going to open up our laptop. What's so interesting is the mandates that obviously we're, you know, here to hopefully we'll say will never happen again. They disproportionately affected the people that were actually keeping the country afloat. It's like, yeah, if you're able to kind of roll out of bed at 8:55 and open up your computer and just go to work the same, then like vaccine mandates and mask mandates don't irritate you the same as someone that has to work on an assembly line all day long to make sure that your family has food to eat that night. And it's this caste system that was built in. And so then young people were basically put in a penalty box. You graduate, earlier recent graduates or current college students, a penalty box for 18 months. 18 months, and it's not like the country was the same when you left it. So for 18 months, nothing was normal. So we have the most suicidal, most depressed, most alcohol addicted, most drug addicted generation in history. And I hear from, you know, people that are baby boomer plus, like, oh, they just need to work harder and get their act together. It's like, wait a second. It's like, do you think there might be anything with public policy that might have actually handed them something where they're in a less free country? The lockdowns were a massive government intervention that did nothing but made young people poorer and made rich people richer. It was an upside down wealth distribution scheme to make students and recent college graduates less likely to own property, get married, and have children. And so one of the things I try to implore with conservatives running for office, and this is kind of one of the takeaways, is that we should talk about making those three things easier. You all of a sudden want young people to be less depressed, have them start owning land, finding a partner of meaning, and have children. Those three things are like the easy things we should be talking about. There's other things in particular, you know, beyond that, having a job would be nice, you know, because that would make the other things possible. But instead, I'm afraid that conservatives are kind of missing this opportunity. And there's this opportunity, and this is one of the reasons why Bernie Sanders resonates so well with younger people. And this is something that a lot of, I think, adults are missing, and you guys would resonate. It's not just that students want free stuff. There's plenty of people that do. But instead, they look at Bernie Sanders, and they say, I actually look at him, and he's going to give me freedom. I know this is going to sound silly, but it's like, he's going to forgive my student loans because I was lied to, and I went to college, and I know that it was wrong for me. And he's going to wipe that out because when I was 18, when I was most vulnerable, I was told I had to go to some stupid school to go get a degree when in reality it wasn't necessary. And Bernie Sanders is going to wipe me clean of that debt. It's like he's going to break my shackles. Now, of course, that is not, you know, the argument that I would make, but that is the way that a lot of people process it. So what do you do about it? Well, if we do nothing, and I'm not saying I have all the answers, let me tell you what's going to happen if we do nothing, okay? You're going to get some really radical politicians that are going to take advantage of this. I'm talking about really radical. That'll make AOC look like a moderate. No. Think about it. You have a generation that doesn't own anything, that isn't married to people and has no kids. You're talking about like a combustible engine that's waiting to take off for a legitimate socialist revolution in this country. Where you have two people that own 40%, more than 40% of the bottom quadrant, people are like, how do we stop socialism? Get young people to start owning stuff quickly, like now. They better be bought into this society like quickly. The clock is ticking. Because the longer that window goes, a generation of renters, a generation of just people staring at their screens all day long, there will be a moment where the left actually has someone that is somewhat articulate and not totally insane, and they put them up, and it's like, you know what? I think it's time for a year of jubilee, which was a commandment, by the way, in the Old Testament. I think we need to take all the money from the billionaires and give it back to young people who are locked down, who are more suicidal, more alcohol addicted, more drug addicted. That's going to be a hard argument for me to kind of refute. I don't believe it. I think it's bad for society. Mass wealth confiscation is immoral, but that tsunami will be really hard to stop. And it'll make America less free. It'll only make the government more powerful. So how do we stop it? We need to make sure all of you are bought into the system. This is one of the things that has always made America so difficult to have a socialist revolution is the middle class. The middle class is completely disappearing. They want a class that if you're lucky enough to make it, you work for a major corporation or a major tech company, and you're kind of in that ruling elite, the top 2% of the country, or you're just kind of in this managed poor. You get the government checks, you get the stimulus checks, you really don't get much wealthier every single year. You kind of live in your government appropriated housing unit. Super depressing, by the way, like incredibly depressing. And small business entrepreneurship basically disappears. So that kind of putting all that together, my challenge to adults is that there needs to be an intergenerational apology. And people don't like hearing that. They don't. The lockdowns have created, and the fiscal policy that went alongside of it, by the way, and the $6 trillion of new money that was created, I believe have created a set of circumstances that are making this generation so far behind the eight ball before they can even vote when they're 18 years old. This is a deal that is immoral from the very start. So I'm not saying redistribution, but there needs to be a national recovery program, a program that prioritizes young people, Generation Z and millennials in particular, and gets them excited about something again. Not just this kind of constant gloom of like wokeism and am I like violating the tenets of white fragility or whatever it is that people talk about nowadays. It's super depressing, but it's like, you know what, actually, this is an amazing country and you should believe in it again. And I want you to believe in it. And so you want to create conservatives Create people that own stuff, that are married, and that have lots of children. That will get the liberalism out of it, like, immediately. And it'll make your country much more recognizable. Oh.
For a couple years now, people have been setting up a contest between crypto and gold. But that's like comparing a truck with an SUV. Both carry stuff and travel from A to B, but they do different jobs. Gold's job is to keep the value of your money safe and preserve its value. And since Ukraine, the oil, and the inflation crisis, it's done a brilliant job compared to stocks and other investments. So if you're worried about what's going on right now, who isn't? Just talk to an expert at Noble Gold about precious metal IRAs for your retirement. They'll put you straight on your options and hold your hand through the whole setup process. And this month, for any qualified IRA, you'll get an incredible 3-ounce silver American Virtue coin completely free as a thank you. So call 877-646-5347 now to find out more or visit noblegoldinvestments.com. That's noblegoldinvestments.com.
Okay, so, yeah, let me just kind of mention this, which is if you're confused about what's happening in the country, it's intentional. I mentioned this. Confusion and chaos always end in a tyrant. So they're creating confusion because then it's easier to consolidate power. This is exactly what happened in the French Revolution. Robespierre, you guys can study it closely. Napoleon took advantage of it. People desire a strong man when things start to fall apart. So they want you to be confused about gender norms. They want you to be confused about historical norms. They want you to be confused about the country in general because they're going to use it as a means to the end to try to get towards some sort of authoritarianism and tyranny. This is exactly why these kind of seemingly silly kind of culture war disputes are super important. They're not silly, right? Being able to define what a man is, what a woman is because, you know, we should reject tyranny in all of its forms. But when people are owning nothing and they're in this kind of place of widespread confusion, they're going to be more likely to want to latch onto someone that's going to come in and say, you know what? I'm going to nationalize things. I'm going to get rid of inflation, all this. It creates the conditions for that kind of person to come into place, right? And that's a way that you kind of view of all this. Finally, I want to ask, what is the purpose of education? A lot of you guys are in education right now. I've made my thoughts somewhat clear about college. Happy to go into that more. Parents out there, be very careful sending your kids to college. You'll play Russian roulette with their values, and you may never see them again. Maybe University of Arkansas has no liberals. I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. You guys could tell me. So there you go. So you guys could tell me all about it, I'm sure. So I never go into a state and tell people what's wrong with their state. California, actually, that's the exception. I do that all the time in California. I'm going wrong. That's not true. But you guys could tell me in Q&A, and then I can respond to that, and we can explore that together. But what is the purpose of education? And this is something that, you know, we're kind of debating right now in our country. And you see that in this whole Florida situation, right? Where in Florida, somehow Disney, you know, $250 billion major media company is coming out and they're super upset because all of a sudden, you know, five-year-olds won't be learning about gay sex or whatever, right? And by the way, this is total gaslighting. It's pure and total propaganda, okay? Is that if you think you're losing your mind, you're not. This is a propaganda technique, okay? It's a parental rights bill that was passed in Florida that is so vanilla, it should have gotten unanimous support and Disney should have supported it. Instead, the exact opposite has happened. Instead, Governor Ron DeSantis, God bless him, by the way, the courageous and the wonderful Ron DeSantis, signed into law this parental rights bill. Disney is now saying by the end of the year they want half their characters to be lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans. I can't remember all the letters, whatever, all that stuff. By the end of the year they want half. They want more children to be exposed to gay kissing and that stuff. That's their own statement. You can make your own judgment on that, whether you think five-year-olds need to be exposed to that. And then Disney comes out and they say in their private Zoom call, now leaked, that, you know, it's the not-so-secret gay agenda at Disney. Okay, so if we don't actually know what education is, some of these things can be kind of hard to dispute because someone will say, no, it's free speech. We need to give teachers free speech to five-year-olds. I say, who on earth, what do you think education is? Do you think it's the time for a teacher to spout out whatever they want to talk about? Of course not. You're developing a mind there, and that's a really fragile thing. I don't care your opinion at all, actually. There's some guy in MSNBC, he says, you know, I'm really concerned because I won't be able to tell my five-year-olds in kindergarten that I went paddleboarding with my husband. It was a guy that was saying this. I was like, wait, and he called them his children in the class, which was super creepy, right? But I was like, wait a second, whoever told you that's the purpose of why you're a teacher? You as a teacher are there to lead a student towards what is good, true, and beautiful. You're there to create good citizens. You're there to capture their imagination so they can study the Western canon towards things that make them a fully developed human being. And then people say, well, Charlie, what if the children think differently? Exactly, who cares? They're children. They're not in charge of their own education. This is exactly what's wrong. And by the way, you think about it, we've been propagandized about this. People say, well, we have to listen to children's opinion. No, we don't. It's completely irrelevant what the children think. What's relevant is what we want and what is good. If we now think it's controversial to say adults know what is better for children than what children think for as children, then we got to redo the entire dietary guidelines now. This is the most obvious thing that we could get. We say, and they're like, well, no, we need to have all the children share their opinions. It's like, actually, it's irrelevant what an 8-year-old opinion is to me. What's relevant is, are they grasping things that get them on the journey to be a complete human being? Understand the unity of mind, body, and spirit. To understand what it's like that the world is really tough, really nasty, really mean, and they're going to have to be tough and have perseverance and grit to get through that. To know that they are just one part in an ever-unfolding story of a God who made them and loves them, and they're made in the image of that God. Are we communicating that? And so what is the purpose of education? It's not giving a teacher some soapbox to say whatever they want to say. It's instead having teachers that know they want to lead them forth towards what is good, true, and beautiful. And that's actually where the word education comes from. It means literally to lead forth in Latin. Okay, so that's a lot of fun. Let's do some questions. I just want to say this in closing of this part of the remarks. I just want to encourage all of you right now that might feel as if you're living under some form of tyranny right now. Okay? It's normal. It's okay. But it is never the wrong thing to push back against tyranny. It might not be comfortable. It might not be easy. But you will be rewarded long term, especially if you do that at a young age. The younger you get used to that, the freer and happier your life will be. So what is the definition of tyranny? Do you have to watch your language, your word choice, your association, your social media comments, always as if someone is watching, and if you say something wrong, your life will be derailed? If the answer to that question is yes, you are not free. So do something about it. And that's what our Turning Point USA kids are doing every single day. They're making the decision like, hey, there's going to be a consequence. I don't care. I'm going to live in a place of personal freedom. And I want to get that country back, and you guys can all do that. Okay, thank you so much. Let's do some questions, guys. So, okay, right here, if you guys line up, and we love disagreements. If you no soapbox, though, please. So we reserve the right to interject. Okay, let's get to some questions here. We got a fair amount of time, too. So, yeah. Okay.
At what point do you think corporations have a right, if any, to require vaccinations of any kind?
It's a great question. So, look, I think over a certain size, over 10 employees, I would have loved to have seen every conservative legislature to say that vaccination status is a protected class, and it's none of the business of an employer to be able to come in and to require the vaccine of anyone. In fact, I shouldn't even say 10 people. I should just say in general, if you are in a workplace, similar under the Civil Rights Act, where there is a protected class, if you will, and look, no one should be forced to get the vaccine against their will. No one should be forced to get the vaccine against their will. And the amount of people that lost their jobs, lost their livelihoods, that saw their entire world fall apart all around them was so unbelievable to me. So what should conservatives do about that? Well, lawmakers should step up and say, listen, if you have rights as an employee, that you should not be able to be terminated for your job just because you don't want to take an experimental vaccine that we all know, by the way, does not prevent against infection, does not totally prevent against hospitalization. And by the way, if we're talking about this in general, why is it that we're never allowed to talk about azithromycin, hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, vitamin D? Why is it we can never talk about those things, ever? So corporations should – so vaccine status – should fall under HIPAA. Yeah. Let me say that again. Vaccine status should fall under HIPAA, and it currently does not. And so that's a very easy fix that anyone in our government could do. Thank you for your question.
In regards to, you're talking a lot about the caste system and the difference between, like, how there's a wider gap between the lower class and the higher class and how the middle class is disappearing. You mentioned a lot of that as an issue, but you didn't really provide much of a solution to that issue. You just kind of stated that it's an issue, and then you kind of continued onwards. And in regards to that, you did bring up how Bernie Sanders, you said, takes advantage of that fact. Well, and then you said that, so in regards to that, as, okay, I probably should.
That's okay. So you're asking basically what would be some of my solutions to that, right? Not just addressing the problem. Is that a fair summary?
More or less.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah, so I'm glad you mentioned it. Didn't have as much time to dive into it as I would like. So first, and this will be the generic answer, and then I'll get into the non-generic answer, okay? The first and foremost is, and this is idealistic and unlikely to happen, is that the federal government has to get off the backs of entrepreneurs, stop creating money out of thin air, which is hyperinflating our currency and destroying the wealth of regular everyday people, right? Now, I say that's the generic answer because that's the answer you'll get from almost anyone on the center, right? But it's totally true. Totally true. Inflation is a thief. It is a thief. Inflation makes you poorer. And inflation is directly correlated, thanks to the $6 trillion additionally that we created out of thin air in the last 18 months. Period. End of story. Even the San Francisco Federal Reserve, who's basically incentivized not to say that, has come out and said that. So let me tell you something, though, that will be a little bit contrarian, which is that I believe that conservatives should entertain certain policy portfolios where there are tax packages, tax incentives for people to have children. The number one reason why people do not have children in this country is economic. And that's wrong. If it's too expensive to have kids, we should say that matters more than just tax cuts. Right? So we need to have a hierarchy of needs, wants, and concerns, right? So when the birth rate plummets by 600,000 babies last year, like, whoa, that's not good for society. That creates really kind of nihilistic people. Now, I'm not saying free handouts or free money or any of that, but I think if you're a working family and that you're paying your taxes and you're doing things the right way, of course government will screw this up, so it sounds too idealistic, but maybe there might be a way to get this done. It's an interesting conversation if we could pull it off, right? Which would be, I actually think that we need to make it easier to do that. And so this is a moral question, right? Especially under kind of the current state of affairs that we have right now. We give checks to illegals that come into our country, yet we don't give any sort of benefit, except like maybe like an $800 tax rebate, if that, for young families that are trying to make it. So let me give you an example, right? So in order to sustain a family of four, you need 53 weeks of labor right now. 53 weeks. So if you're math, you're like, wait a second, that's more than the whole year. Yeah, which means you have to go into debt or both spouses have to work. In 1985, it was 36 weeks of labor, which means that the breadwinner could maybe work 42 and take off 10, whatever that might be, right? And so what's happened is now because of inflation, because of the hyper-corporatization of our country, because we don't make stuff in our country anymore, because we've destroyed the backbone of the blue-collar base in our country, and we made this big bargain. Now, I'm going to do something you're not allowed to do. You guys ready? I am going to criticize the biggest employer in the state. You're not allowed to do that, right? And so, but let's be honest. Walmart is largely to blame for the deindustrialization of the core of this country. Okay? Now, I'm not saying everyone who works for Walmart's a bad person or that they've never done anything right. Whatever, okay? But let's be honest, is that they were front and center of all the trade deals of saying we're going to send stuff over there, bring it back cheaper, and bring it and sell it back to the communities. Bad deal. Now, it could be okay in some nuanced way, maybe, but when you all of a sudden lose 11 million manufacturing jobs and you have the hollowing out, you're like, wow, we no longer have jobs, no longer have the tax basis. The men no longer, you know, are really have direction in the community. And what do we get in return? Cheap plastic from Wuhan and opioids. That's a bad deal. And I don't care if it, like, increases the stock price of a favorable company in this area. We should say, like, I don't, morally, I'm not okay with that. Like, the obligation of the people of our country are to their citizens first and foremost, not corporate profits. And so that's a lot, kind of, I touched on, but this is one of the things that really bothers me and kind of just dealing with the current state of affairs. I actually think everything I just talked about is agreed upon by 85% to 90% of the country. I really do. Instead, I find that we can't find agreement because of other issues that pop up that I think the media focuses on that we're not going to back down on. But look, yes, I think that there needs to be entertaining, new, and exciting ideas that will put our citizens first and understand that this generation needs right now some form of new energy. Because the trajectory right now is this generation will go down as the lost generation, the depressed generation, and that can quickly be turned into Just study history. Study the Weimar Republic, how quickly those types of generations can embrace really bad ideas. If their money is worth nothing and they own nothing and they're not married, that is like the perfect prerequisite for a super revolution. I don't want to live through that. You guys don't either. Thank you for your question. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Hey, my question is kind of a two-parter. Is that all right?
Make it quick.
Okay. So first off, if you had to choose between Doc or whatever outside and Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who would you choose for Arkansas?
So we're a 501c3, so I'll answer your question, but I'm going to say it personally, if that's okay.
Yes.
So I've known Sarah for a very long time, 100% Sarah Huckabee Sanders, not even close. So to answer your question. So. But that's on me personally, so don't hold the organization accountable for that. So.
And also, I told my mom I was coming. Is there a way I can get a selfie?
You asked so politely, so yes. Okay? All right. You got to get it ready, man.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. All right, you got it? Let's go. All right, next question. And by the way, if you have a disagreement, you're welcome to come to the line and we can chat. Okay, who's up?
Hey, Charlie. My name is Journey. I was just curious about the last thing you said about teaching our kids. What would you say to those who say that what's teaching our kids that's true and beautiful and right is teaching our kids about sexuality and that kind of stuff?
So they would say that what is teaching kids about issues or is that?
Yeah, like teaching them about gay sex is true and beautiful and what they should be learning.
Okay, so. Happy to go into a whole classical education course on why that isn't the case. Look, let me make this more broad, and you guys can fill this in yourself. What is good? What is good? What is true? What is beautiful? The founders knew it, and they put it very specifically in the Declaration of Independence. This is the universal statement. Then I'll get to the more specific one: the laws of nature and nature's God. Right? The laws that put our entire universe in motion. Not just the laws of physics, but also the laws of ethics, right? The laws of how human beings should operate. More specifically, what is good and true and beautiful? The teachings of the Bible. And we should be unafraid to say that out loud, right? And so some people, let's make this more universal, right? I know this is a kind of more Christian audience, but let's try to make this even more universal. Let's just make it abstract where it says a transcendent higher power. Absent a belief in a transcendent higher power, it could be the Buddhist God or the Hindu God or the Christian God, whatever. Obviously, I'm a Christian. I'm unapologetic about it. Let's just say an unchanging standard. If you remove that, then right and wrong is merely an opinion. And we could have that back and forth all day long, but if you just deduct it back down to no God, no higher purpose, it really is like, I think you're right, I think you're wrong. You need something unchanging. You need something unmovable as the standard, whatever that standard might be. And this is the problem that humanists and atheists will always run into. They're like, well, we just kind of know murder is wrong because it's just wrong. It's like, really, according to who, what is wrong? Where do you get that from? And they'll say eventually, well, it's because there's a standard above. Oh, okay, so you're elevating something. So you do believe in a hierarchy. You do believe in something. So this is, I'm summarizing it the best I can in 90 seconds or less, but this is tough work, and we need to get our kids learning this from a young age. And by the way, they used to get this reinforced by watching movies and film. So they used to like live in a culture that actually elevated these beautiful stories. And now it's the opposite, right? Now, even if you send your kids to a classical education or you're homeschooling, anyone homeschooling, by the way? God bless you guys. Amazing. Even if you're homeschooling, even if you're doing that, you're like, whoa, what are they going to watch when I'm not homeschooling them, right? Like, should I give them a smartphone? Probably not. Like, all these sorts of things, right? Really, really important. So I'm happy to get into the specifics of that more, but I want to get to some more questions. So thank you.
Hello. What would you say to feminists, specifically those I think you would consider biological women, who are in support of trans women being able to access historically women's spaces like female bathrooms and being able to participate in women's sports?
Okay, what would I say? Let me ask, are you one of those feminists?
I am.
Oh, okay. Lucky guess. What is a woman?
Somebody who identifies as a woman.
So can I become a woman?
Do you have gender dysphoria?
Thankfully, no.
Then no.
Oh, but so only if you have gender dysphoria, you can identify as a woman?
It's a medical condition.
It's a medical condition. So anyone at any time can become a woman?
No. Because...
Well, anyone could have gender dysphoria. It's you claim it upon yourself. I'm actually thinking I might have gender dysphoria. So can I become a
woman?
Well,
I wish you the best in your transition, and I hope that society accepts you.
So let me ask you a question. What is cheating?
What is cheating?
Mm-hmm.
I can pull up a dictionary definition.
No, like give an example. Maybe taking something from somebody or a strong person, you know, maybe using their power against the weak.
Sure. Somebody using their power against the weak.
Got it. Okay. Is Leah Thomas or William Thomas biologically stronger than the competitors that he/she was against?
I don't know about that specific situation. Probably because she is number one.
Won the national title.
Yes.
Okay.
Won the national title.
After the transition, right? Okay. Is that fair?
Yes.
So the other women against the man were born with less bone density, lower testosterone levels. What are they supposed to do to make it even?
I would not know on that specific situation.
Right, so there's nothing they can do because men have more testosterone, muscle mass, and bone density. So wouldn't that be cheating?
I feel like I'm being pulled into a trap, and I'm going to step away.
No, it's not a trap. No, it's not. I mean, just one sec. It's a very simple moral question, right? So if someone is stronger and was born that way, is able to compete against people that are not as strong because they're born that way, wouldn't that be the textbook definition of cheating?
I don't know about that one. I'm going to step away.
Okay.
Thank you.
Can I ask you one more question, though?
Yes.
Okay, so you're a feminist, and you say anyone who has gender dysphoria can transition to become a woman at any time. That's your position?
Sure.
Okay, do you think chromosomes have anything to do with determining what a female is?
Yes.
Okay, so then where does the gender dysphoria come into place?
I think that sex and gender are different things.
Right, but then what is a woman?
Somebody who identifies as a woman.
So anyone can be a woman at any single time?
You've asked me this question. It's still no.
Got it. And you're a feminist?
I am.
So who are you trying to protect?
Still true. What was that?
What women are you trying to protect?
Women. All women.
That you can't,
regardless
that you can't
of whether or not they've transitioned.
Whether or not they've transitioned.
Yes.
Well, I wish you well in the coming situation where now as a feminist you're going to have to live under the tyranny of men who think they're women. Thank you for being here tonight.
Hey everybody, Charlie Kirk here. It's time to get serious about long-term emergency food storage. If you don't already have a good stockpile, now is the time to get one. Go to preparewithkirk.com and you'll save $150 on a 3-month emergency food kit from our friends at My Patriot Supply. My Patriot Supply is America's largest preparedness company with millions of satisfied customers. Their 3-month kit gives you a wide variety of delicious breakfast, lunch, dinner, drinks, and snacks for one person for 3 solid months. Be sure to get one kit for each member of your family. Go to preparewithkirk.com right now and you'll save $150 on each 3-month emergency food kit you order. We are 9 meals away from anarchy, and these kits are in stock and ready to ship. Are you ready for the things that are happening right now? I don't know. We'll go to preparewithkirk.com, and your order will arrive in unmarked boxes for your privacy. Do not wait until it's too late. Go to preparewithkirk.com right now. Prepare today, survive tomorrow. So go to preparewithkirk.com, preparewithkirk.com.
Hello. I'd like to continue upon her question. So you put a lot of focus on Leah Thomas and that whole situation. However, what about all of the other trans athletes that don't make it to the top? Because I unfortunately don't have a list of every trans athlete known to man. I didn't fully prepare, but what about all of the, because Leah Thomas is one case out of many. So what about the other trans athletes that have transitioned and do participate in sports, but don't make it to the top and are middle of the pack?
Well, they're still beating other women, aren't they? They're taking somebody's spot, right?
Well, no.
But
they
not,
are women.
Okay,
they have
so,
transitioned.
So let's ask a question. So thank you for being here and the courage for talking, first of all. What is a woman? Let's start there.
Well, as she said, anyone who identifies as such, and traditionally it would be gender dysphoria, that is a legitimate medical condition. So if you have gender dysphoria, you know, yes.
Okay, so let's that's interesting. Mm-hmm. So that's your personal definition of what a woman is. Why should society adopt that definition, therefore disenfranchising chromosomal born women?
Really, it's out of respect for those that have the condition.
Got it. So we should elevate the people with the mental condition over half the population.
No. Not at all. I'm just saying that we should just simply, because it's not a battle between I'm elevating this person over another person. It's merely out of respect for that person, for them to feel comfortable and to participate in the sport of, you know, their gender that they identify
as. Okay, so feeling comfortable. So giving people what they want is not always the right thing, okay? So let me give you an example. We do not give liposuction to people with anorexia. People with anorexia would want liposuction. It would kill them. We know better than that. Mm-hmm. So just giving people what they want is not always the right thing. So you say to make people comfortable. We could probably agree. I don't want people to be uncomfortable. But then you have the choice to make. What if all of a sudden you're making half the population uncomfortable and the sport itself is all of a sudden being destroyed and standards as we know it are completely destroyed? So let me ask you a question. If someone, and I don't want to assume your gender, you could tell me whatever it is, is dealing with that situation, why don't they continue to compete as that new gender with the people with their chromosomes that they share?
Because they don't identify as such. And I actually, I'm really glad you brought up the example with the, I'm sorry, could I like steer the conversation back towards you said about comfort?
But let me ask you another question. So how people identify matters a lot to you, right?
Yes,
correct?
Of course.
Okay, so should we allow adults who identify as toddlers compete in preschool soccer?
No.
Why? They identify as a child. We want them to be comfortable.
No, because that's not a legitimate mental
condition. It absolutely is. No. That's a real thing. Having people think that they're in a different body is a real thing. People think that they're dogs. People think that they're cats. And some people think they're children still. They never grow out of it. It's a legitimate mental condition. So shouldn't we accommodate fully grown 50-year-old men who want to play t-ball?
Well, no, because they require a different treatment plan. And this is what I wanted to steer back to.
Really?
Yes, okay. I wanted to steer back towards what we talked about with comfort. It is shown, and this is legitimate, those who transition and are treated as the gender that they identify as mentally improve unbelievably, and it is absolutely true.
So I hate to break it to you. They're more likely to commit suicide. There's a huge community called Transition Regret. I encourage you to look at it. It has 27,000 members on Facebook of people who make the chemical castration decision to transition, and that's an irreversible decision. It's a growing group of people that say, I was sold a complete bill of goods here. And so, you know, that really is the question, which is, if it's irreversible, and you're citing some study that, honestly, the data shows exactly the opposite, is that they're more likely to commit suicide, more likely for self-harm, all these sorts of things. What is the proper way to treat it?
As I said, the study has not been disproven. The reason that the suicide rate is so high is because they are bullied for who they are.
See, this
I have seen it.
This is nonsense.
In school, and this is a truth.
And you know why I know it's nonsense? Because every single person in this room disagrees with you fundamentally and is treating you incredibly respectfully tonight. That is a pile of garbage. I know it's a pile of garbage.
Of course.
And so instead, and I'll be honest, it's the people that are in those positions that end up becoming the bullies themselves that kick me off of Twitter. That's, and no offense, but kind of your team is the one that's super, like, offended that I used a name that Levine used to have. Like, who's the bully in this situation?
Well, it's disrespectful to do that because she identifies as a woman.
Was
and it is
not
just disrespect.
Levine's
that
name?
Is why we... Some I can't speak for everyone else. I can only speak for myself at the end of the day, right? And it's just disrespectful. And it is not right to call Leah Thomas her dead name. well, out of respect for her.
Levine or whatever. But so, but let me zero in on this, right? So it's a birth name, whatever, you could call it a dead name. It's fine. But if I were to do a biography on Thomas and I would include that name, how is that disrespectful? Isn't that, like, let's take your argument at face value. Wouldn't that be a journey of transition, a courageous movement towards who you really are? Like, an uplifting kind of sort of story and saga from the man I used to be and the woman I am now? How's that disrespectful?
Oh, well, in that context, then, probably.
So dead naming's now okay. I mean, maybe my tweet was all about the courageous journey of Ricardo Levine that once was named Richard and now his name is Rachel. Do you see what's getting here is that you're putting a lot of preference on context and on how I identify and all of this. And your opinions, you can have your opinions. But what we're talking about tonight is how we structure society, right? And that is a totally different thing than your opinion. So when we start to structure society on a vast minority opinion, and we start to use power and force around that vast minority of an opinion, all of a sudden, the only way you can win that argument is the person who wins the oppression Olympics. Is the person who says, I'm the most victimized, therefore I get to create the rules because I'm not comfortable. And here's something that you might not want to hear, is that if you have liberty, by definition, you're not going to be comfortable. You cannot have liberty and comfort. You can't have them together. Instead, you know what? And I think deep down you have this in you. You can get stronger. And I want you to get stronger. Instead of you trying to remove everything that offends you in the world, I want you to dig deeper and be tougher than the people around you. That's what we believe. Final thought. Final thought. Yeah.
Oh, final thought. Sorry. I'm trying to think of a final thought. At the end of the day, like, no hate towards you. I respect your opinion. Of course, like, I'm not here to, you know, cause a fight or an intense argument. I'm just saying I disagree. And there is no oppression Olympics. All that, you know, we want is simply just recognition and respect. That's really it.
Well, look, truthfully, here's the thing is that that's what you want. And individually, I think I've given that to you. But here's where I draw the line. I'm not going to restructure society on something I know that's not true. I'm not going to turn my back on 50% of the population for something that's not true. And I'm certainly not going to call somebody a pronoun that I know that isn't true in front of me. So I believe your soul totally demands respect. Absolutely. 100%. But as soon as you then start to get into society and civilization and restructure everything around your feelings, then all of a sudden it's whoever has the loudest voice and who's willing to use power. And that's where we as conservatives draw the line. I want to thank you for being here tonight, truly. Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
That's Charlie. Oh, my bad. I didn't realize that. That's Charlie. My name is Joe Gonzalez. And first of all, I want to thank you for taking the time to answer not only my question, but to those that came before me and those that will come after me. My question is very relevant to the previous questions I have been asked with respect
it's a hot button topic.
To what gender and sex is. You've placed an emphasis on the roles of men and women, so I must ask, what do you consider masculinity to be?
Boy, how much time you got? The masculine characteristic inherently favors the unknown, single-minded, willing to challenge for the greater good. The masculine is the one that is less likely to nurture, but more likely to protect. The masculine is necessary, but without the feminine, you get an autocrat. A country best balanced is the best mixture of the feminine and the masculine. The feminine, you might ask, what is the feminine? More likely to listen. Never doubt a woman's intuition. I know when my wife says something, I listen very carefully. But if there's a bully, a tyrant, a problem, I don't expect her to go solve it. That's my job. And I'm going to do it. Men and women are made for each other. They need each other. Does that answer your question?
Now, I ask this because I want to follow through with another point.
Okay.
In high school, I knew a man who took care of students who struggled, whether it be from broken homes, mental illness, or other issues. He spoke with us with an empathy that was not given to many of us by others who were told to protect us and to give us the guidance that we needed, which in your case, when you speak of counselors, you'd be right. Now, that man has been an inspiring figure to me, and I call him a man because he's a transgender woman.
Okay.
You know, under your definition. So yeah. Does that make him less of a man? Does the character he's displayed not only as a teacher, but as a veteran,
well, look, that's
does
awfully,
that reduce that's, his masculinity?
That's awfully hypothetical because I don't know this person, but you're kind of proving my point. You said that the trans person is really empathetic, therefore feminine.
Not really, no. There's no correlation there.
Empathetic is
empathy
a feminine
is not
quality.
A feminine trait. No.
It absolutely.
Absolutely not.
You
no.
get a group of men together.
No. There is no difference.
You don't know exactly. The football team
empathy.
Is not Karen.
Empathy is one of the most masculine traits imaginable.
Okay, look, I
that's
mean,
what brings
look,
about
man,
change.
All right. Okay. So you're wrong. So
how am I wrong? Because you're pandering to a specific crowd.
Well,
all of a sudden, my point isn't valid.
Look. Again, you're playing the machismo card. I'm
machismo,
not.
Machismo, yes.
Yeah. So
because you're
just,
the one who's placed such a value on the role of men.
You better
you're the one.
Let me finish the point.
This. Go ahead.
Slow down.
Please.
You're at like a 10. You got to be at like a 3, man. All right?
Okay,
there's one person getting upset here. Here, you get a bunch of men together, a hunting club, a football club, any sort of group of men. They're not sharing feelings, and they're not talking about like deep sort of thing. You know, you get women together, what do they do? Book club? Right, not exactly like hunting and fishing. There's reasons for this. God designed us differently. You don't have to overthink it. Now, can certain men be more feminine than others? Of course. Can certain men have more of kind of an inclination towards empathy? Obviously. Do men have zero empathy? No. But there's a hard wiring. There's a circuitry. There's a DNA in us. And the Bible speaks to this. Experience speaks to this. And quite honestly, just look around. It speaks to you. There's different needs, wants, and interests all around you. So you asked a hypothetical question, but does it make the person less of a man, even though I'm not going to answer the hypothetical, but I will say this. The rejection of the patently obvious masculine and feminine traits that have built all of society and the humility it takes to say, I don't have patience as a man like women do. Guess what? Every man should have the courage to say that. I don't. I lose patience easily. I look at women, they have the patience to listen and all of this. That's not the way I'm wired. I want to go through walls. I want to take care of problems. Guess what? That's masculine energy. If it's not properly harnessed, you could invade Ukraine. Like, that's basically what ends up happening, right? And we see that on full display. So thank you for your question. I want to get to other questions here tonight. So thank you. Appreciate it.
Hey, Charlie. I'm not going to ask you about gender.
Okay.
So...
I don't mind. We can keep the firing line going. It's fine.
Sure, yeah. But, you know, why not? Let's mix it up. So my name's Jarrett. I'm a local business owner here.
Okay.
And, you know, I started my business back in 2021, which I almost didn't do because I think a lot of us were very pessimistic on the right. And, you know, I love what you're doing. And I think that you're here. You're on the road 330 days a year.
Yep.
Because you believe that this country can be saved.
I do.
I think a lot of us have kind of just been through a lot of ups and downs since specifically the 2020 election. So my question for you is, specifically in that time period from the 2020 election until now, how would you describe the change in your optimism that we can still change this country, that we can save this country?
Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you, by the way. I appreciate that. Yeah, of course, I have optimism. I think we could change it. I know the power. I know the problems. We're up against a lot. My goodness. Look, here's the thing. The regime, if you can call it, which is like the collection of cultural institutions, media institutions, economic institutions, they're more powerful than ever. But there's an unexpected development that gives me optimism, that gives me a spirit of positivity, which is the people are more alert and more aware, and they have zero tolerance to this nonsense more than any other time I've seen this in the last decade. We are seeing the rise of the citizen at every single corner. We're seeing students care more about their education. We're seeing moms show up to school board meetings all across the country. We're seeing people show up in massive numbers and demand better out of the people in charge. And so what's happening is all of a sudden – The American people are rejecting their kind of identity, if you will, in being a subject or a serf, and instead they said, I want to be a citizen. Being a citizen is hard. Being a citizen means you're going to take responsibility for your country and responsibility for your actions. Being a citizen means you're going to show up to meetings like this and learn and take nights to do this when you very well could be just sitting at home doing nothing. Being a citizen means voting is like the minimal thing that you do. And so I'm very optimistic in that way. And I also believe some of this discussion here tonight and just kind of the back and forth that we've had, just so we know, that 95% of the country thinks the points that were previously made are so insane, they'll vote for anyone who doesn't believe in that stuff. Like anyone. Is that this idea, like, wait a second, anyone could be a woman and all this, that the woke, if you will, they are giving a massive once-in-a-generation opportunity to all of a sudden bring this country back to some sort of normalcy and some sort of center. They are so out of whack. They are so out of balance. When you start to say that we need black-only dormitories at colleges across the country where men can become pregnant and all this sort of stuff, most people say, I don't know what I believe politically, but I don't believe that. And that gives me so much optimism because they are doubling and tripling down on the most unpopular, radical ideas imaginable in our society. You said you're a small business owner?
Yes, that's right. I have an insurance agency here.
We need more entrepreneurs. Let me say that again. We need more entrepreneurs. Thank you so much.
We're hiring. We're hiring, by the way.
Okay, good.
My name is Micah, and just a quick question. I get a lot of, like, flack and crap for being black and conservative. So, like, Malcolm X in the 60s said that, you know, black people are only used as a political football for
white liberals.
For white liberals, yeah. What would you say that your best argument is to, like, disprove that fact and whatnot?
Well, I kind of agree with Malcolm X, if that's okay to say. I don't know if you're asking me to disprove that, but
no, like prove that it was true.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, thank you. Yeah. So just to understand, Malcolm X, kind of a mixed bag. Don't agree with everything he believed in, but Malcolm X was totally right on this. Malcolm X railed against white liberals that were trying to use the black population for their own personal gain, and boy was he right. And so you kind of look at, I mean, just look at one public polling poll, right, where the question is, do you support defunding the police? Most black communities don't support defunding the police. Who supports defunding the police are like upper white liberals on the northeast side of New York. It's like there's this huge disconnect. And so, look, but if you look at an even more fundamental, deeper level of this, I think what is most interesting and most important is that, like, black culture in America is completely disconnected from white liberal metropolitan culture. And they're actually at the exact opposite. You could speak, and you might disagree, but at least my experience and the black conservatives I spend time with is that this, like, trans issue is the least popular in the black community of all the communities in the country. It's like it's the least popular, especially when it comes to, like, men. They're like, what? Are you kidding me? And yet it's being pushed by white liberals on a party where they're the most reliable voting demographic, right? And so, look, put simply is that I believe that white liberals running the entire apparatus have taken for granted the average black voter. They think it's just already baked in. And at the very least, it's like you have to compete for the vote, right? I mean, in black communities across the country, you have failing schools, rising crime, and deteriorating households. And the same political decisions keep on being made over and over again. So, yeah, I can help you unpack that further, I suppose. But it really kind of goes down to this, which is, what is the best for a human being regardless of color? The best for human beings is to be able to own property, get a fair education, have streets that aren't widespread with crime. These issues should not be controversial at all. You know, it shouldn't be controversial to say that we want school choice, we want better schools, all these sorts of things. So happy to unpack that further. But let me just ask you a question. Being a black conservative, how does the black community treat you in that way?
So my barber, I get my haircut in Fayetteville, and every time I sit down in the chair, he's asking me all kinds of questions, and he gives me all these stats, and I don't even know if any of them are actually true, but he says them confidently enough to where they might be true. And I just have to sit there and take it. I don't know what exactly stats, you know, to refute those
sure.
with.
It's not your job.
So, I mean, I just get, and all my uncles and everybody just rails on me. I've been called, you know, Uncle Tom,
yep.
every name in the book.
There's a great movie. I don't know if you've seen that
oh,
movie.
I've seen
yeah,
it,
with Larry Elder and the great Candace
Owens.
Yep. Yeah, so let me just kind of encourage you, though. You got to keep holding the line. You're not alone. There's a growing community of black conservatives across the country that are sick and tired of the one-stop-shop monolithic thinking. The great Larry Elder, as I mentioned, Candace Owens, Brandon Tatum have been helping lead this charge. You are not alone. They want you to make you feel alone. And I just want to say we have your back 100%. But God bless you.
Hey,
Hey, Charlie. I appreciate how much time you spent talking about housing policy specifically,
yes.
But I want to ask you, what do we as young people do when the people in charge of things like interest rates and down payments at the Federal Reserve only care about making Green Line go up for woke Wall Street businesses?
Man, what a great question. So, look, this is the tough part, right, which is we're now in a place where your financial future is less in the hands of what you do and more in the hands of what your leaders do. That's not a good set of circumstances. I'll prove it to you, right? So we'll have 23% inflation in most cities across the country this year, minimum. I don't believe the government numbers, and you shouldn't either. It's 23 to 25% across the board. At least it is in Phoenix. We know it. We've charted it. So that means that you, if you just keep your money in your bank account, you'll get 23 to 25% poorer each year. So what do you have to do then? You have to go put your money to work. And this is so people buy risky stocks or investments, hoping that they'll be able to have the market go up in a correlated fashion. I'm not a market guy. I know enough to be dangerous. I don't think the Dow's going up 25% this year. Maybe I'm wrong, but if the market goes up 25%, that means you're just staying neutral. That means you're not getting poor. That means you're just staying the same. I want you to think about that. And so this is the issue, right? Which is this creates cynicism. This connects to kind of what I said earlier, that if you're a young person, you want to believe in the country, right? You want to believe in the system, and you're like, okay, I'm penalized for saving. You will get 25% poorer for saving your money. That's a bad country to live in, right? Not that America's bad, but you know what I mean? Like, you don't want to live in that country where the people who save are the ones that are penalized the most. And so the people that spend quickly are the ones that actually get rewarded. That creates really bad economic decisions. It creates people to invest in ideas that don't really matter. It also creates a lot of economic cynicism, meaning like I might as well go on a vacation. I might as well go into debt, which is the other thing, which is the great winners of this entire equation. So does anyone own property that's young over there? Anyone? Raise your hand. Like two or three hands. So what's terrible? And I guarantee this side of the room owns a lot of property, right? Yes, almost the whole side of the room. So here's the awful nature of what just happened. Not awful for me. I own property and they do too, but it's awful for this side of the room. Your debt, let's say you have a $500,000 mortgage on your home and all of a sudden inflation's 25%. Your debt burden actually decreased by 25%. And so if you're rewarded, but then you want to go buy a home, it's 25% harder because everything went up in value. So you see the different sides of the room there, it disenfranchises. So if you owned property and you borrowed a bunch of money in this kind of short window when rates were super low, you're making out like a bandit right now. You know, corporate borrowing went up by $650 billion in the midst of the pandemic. They knew it was happening. They're like, rates are low. Let's just borrow as much money as we can. We're never going to get this opportunity ever again. So there's ways to fix this. We actually don't have to overcomplicate it. I believe we got to raise rates like immediately. It's like cough syrup. You got to take it. You don't like it, but it's good for the economy. The longer we are on this low rate kind of sugar high, the harder it's going to be for this side of the room to ever break out of it. And then we don't have to overcomplicate this part. My goodness, you want an immediate stimulus? Open up the American energy entrepreneur. Like, what are we doing here? I mean, that's an easy thing to do. And yet we're thinking of buying oil from foreign adversaries, Iran and even Russia. We won't even use our own. That right there will create jobs. And then finally, we need to reopen the American economy. That's the big thing, is that if you're growing at least, then inflation can be managed, right? So let's say they say inflation is 7%. I don't believe them, but let's pretend it's 8%, okay? But if you're growing at 9%, well, then at least your growth is outpacing the inflation. Not ideal, but it's not catastrophic. So what's happening is that average corporations like, oh, yeah, here's a 3% raise. That's what Delta Airlines did. Well, that doesn't cover the 6, 7% cost of living increase. So you're getting 4% poorer. But guess what? The CEO of Delta, he's able to either defer gains via stock, which continues to go up, or rich people are able to deploy their assets a lot quicker and easily in terms of inflation. They'll go to inflation-resistant assets. Like apartment complexes. Apartment complexes are the perfect thing to own in inflation. Why? You can raise your rates every month. And the asset will only increase in value. That side of the room is not owning a lot of apartment complexes, right? They're the ones using it. So what can you do about it? You got to vote people into office that are going to return sound money, stop this ridiculous spending spree that Washington, D.C. is on, and get back to some fiscal sanity. It's the best thing we could do, and do it quickly. Thank you. Okay. I think we have time for one or two more, right? Two more. Okay.
Hi, Charlie. Thank you very much for being here this evening. My question to you is, what exactly is your position on what happened in the 2020 election?
Yep.
Because I see this even among conservatives that I talk to daily. There's just mostly a bunch of blank looks, honestly.
Me.
And, well, there's a lot of also different conservative speakers out there who will say, well, stuff happened in the media, which is true.
Yep.
Stuff happened on the ground, which is also true. But I see almost an unwillingness to think that I personally believe that stuff happened with the actual voting machines. I'm a data analytics minor. Mm-hmm. A lot of my professors are more moderate, and they say the data makes no sense, none of it at all. When you look at the actual results of what happened, it made no sense.
Yeah, so but you're close, because even you will say we're not there yet to be able to prove that. So I agree, the data makes no sense. I have suspicions, but here, let me tell you what I do know and what I do believe. Let's start with a movie that I'm in that all of you guys got to see, Dinesh D'Souza's upcoming movie, 2000 Mules. It's going to be incredible. Using cell phone technology, they're able to trace ballot traffic harvesters in Georgia, Arizona, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, that actually moved ballots illegally in the middle of the night, 3 a.m. You'll see videos of people getting out of the car, stacks of ballots, latex gloves, fully masked, going 3 a.m., going up to ballot drop boxes, full videos, putting ballots into the drop boxes, taking pictures of every ballot so they can get paid, taking off the latex gloves and throwing it in the trash. You'll see video after video after video. So look, I'm not going to speculate on the machines. You know more, a lot more about it than I do. I'm open-minded to it. I've had every expert come on my show, but it kind of always stops with we think, not that we can prove. I'll be very honest. That's just not there yet. You and I could talk privately about that. But let me be very blunt about this. Any person running for office that isn't willing to say that that election was anything short of a highway robbery is a coward, because it was. It was a highway robbery from every single way, from Zuckerberg's $420 million that came in, from the ballot mules to the Hunter Biden suppression story, all of it. It all played in tandem together. So thank you for being here tonight. We're almost out of time. I got to do the last question. Thank you.
Hi. I'm Nico, and I just started a Turning Point USA chapter at Don Tyson School of Innovation. I was wondering if you have... Thank you. I was wondering if you had any tips on how I could further that and what I could do in response to criticism or hate on that.
Are you in high school, you said?
Yes.
Okay, so great question to end on, because now I gotta tell you the truth, and you'll never forget this, but it's going to hurt, but you'll like it. But it's not against you, which is important, though. If you make the decision to be an open conservative in your life, it will come with a cost. It is unavoidable. This is not the roses and unicorn speech. It's not. You're going to be bullied. You'll be called names. You'll be ridiculed. You're going to lose a lot of friends, but you'll be tough. And then all of a sudden, you'll get in a place of mind that will bless you for the rest of your life. You'll no longer go around looking for things wrong to try to remove them. You'll say, I'm tough enough to be able to get through them. It's the best thing a young person can get through. So how do you get through it? You're just going to have to dig deep and become a tougher person. We'll be there to support you. We'll be there to support you with resources, trainings, conferences, staff, you name it. That's what we do at Turning Point USA. But I'm not going to cut any corners. Like, yeah. You're going to be called every name in the book. Teachers are going to look at you funny. It might even impact what college you go to if you decide to go to college, right? It will. All those things are true. But what's really important is, are you developing the soul of an individual? And when you're fighting for things that are virtuous and you're getting backlash for them, that's a great thing for a young person to go through. In fact, it's an essential thing for a young person to go through. So here's where you'll be able to have confidence. You're not alone. Look at all these fellow leaders. Look at everyone in the room. You're part of a movement. It's all across the country. You're fighting for things that are true and beautiful and that have been around and worked. You're fighting for the natural law, and it will make you be more charismatic, wiser, and a better person. But there'll be tough moments. There'll be friends you thought you knew from the very beginning, and they'll be like, really? Now all of a sudden? And like, all right, you're going to learn a lot about those things. But deep down, you're going to be blessed through that entire journey. That's exactly what we at Turning Point USA are here to help you with. So thank you. I appreciate that. All right, everybody. So I want to thank you guys for a great night. I want to thank the opposition people that came up here tonight that were bold enough to be able to speak. I thought that was really helpful. If you're not already subscribed, I appreciate you guys that listen to the Charlie Kirk Show podcast. Thank you for that. You can re-listen to all of these at any time. If you're not yet involved with Turning Point USA, get involved. We have our Young Women's Leadership Summit coming up in Dallas. June, I want to say 2nd, 3rd, you can check it out. TPUSA.no, 3rd, 4th, and 5th. That's right. TPUSA.com/YWLS. Check it out. It's not too far from here. And I just want to encourage you guys. We live in the greatest nation ever to exist in the history of the world. The people in charge are paranoid, and they are worried that normal, everyday people are rising up in record numbers to fight for liberty and to fight for freedom. The future of America and your own future is in our hands. And so let's do something about it, and let's create a country that is worth living in, that is free and prosperous. God bless you guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Email me your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com, and support the Charlie Kirk Show at charliekirk.com/support. Thank you so much for listening. God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.